Again, good morning, everyone, and welcome. So it was interesting a couple of weeks ago when it dawned on me that once again, I would be sharing the Dharma of Scrooge on pre-Christmas, as we've done now for many, many years. I thought to myself, gee, maybe I should come up with something new, you know? You know, I wonder if anybody's still interested. You know, here's Fred once again doing his Dharma of Scrooge. Anyhow, but of course I'm doing it, and with very happy to do it. But the interesting thing was when I took it out yesterday to read through it once again, I was just struck how wonderful it is. And why so many years ago I decided to include the Dharma of Scrooge in one of the holy texts, so to speak, to share in our community. And I think there's a truth of when we're thinking about things, we could think about it in so many different ways. But Zen offers us the truth of entering into life. And so thinking about A Christmas Carol and the Dharma of Scrooge is one thing, but then reading through it again and feeling it is a totally different experience. So I hope if there's anybody on this, in the virtual hall this morning or in the real hall this morning, who is listening with a mind that thinks they've heard it before, please let go of that mind. And let us all be children today, enjoying a wonderful story. It's interesting, the Christmas Carol is often thought of a story of redemption, sort of, you know, where this sinner is redeemed, which is kind of interesting because Buddhism has a tradition of enlightenment. So rather than like being redeemed from his way, he was enlightened as to the way things really are and were and will be. So for me, the Christmas Carol is a metaphor for all our journeys from our conditioned self to our potential. So even though it is often easy to see Scrooge as somebody so unlike us, you know, or to see Scrooge as someone very much like other people we know, I think it's better for us to think that all of us have a bit of Scrooge in us. And maybe not exactly Scrooge, but all of us have our strong conditioning that does not allow us to be truly open and free. So this is Scrooge's journey. Many, many Christmases ago, and I'm reading from the original Charles Dickens, and of course it begins, the first sentence is, Marley was dead. So death, the reality of death. Is where it begins, and of course Marley was Scrooge's partner in business, in their investment house or whatever they did, had to do with money and business. And Marley had been dead for 7 years, and Scrooge had not missed a beat, and it just continued on as if death is just another accounting trick. And then there's some description of Scrooge. Squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous, hard and sharp as a flint. No steel had ever struck out generous fire, secret, self-contained, solitary as an oyster. The cold within him froze his old feature, nipped his pointed nose, shriveled his cheek, stiffened his gait. So it goes on and on. I mean, he was very self-contained. He was very much in himself. and the external world did not exist other than an object for him to view and manipulate to his own ends. Nobody ever stopped him in the street to say, "Dear Scrooge, how are you? Come see me." No beggars even asked him. No children. Nobody spoke to him. Everybody kind of picked up his vibe. And he couldn't care less. He was happy that everybody kept their distance from him. So, once upon a time, all good stories begin once upon a time. On Christmas Eve, there was Scrooge in his counting house on a bleak, bleak day. The door of Scrooge's counting house was open that he might keep his eye upon his clerk, who in a dismal little cell beyond a sort of tank was copying letters. Scrooge had a very small fire, but the clerk's fire was very much smaller. Perhaps it was only one coal, but he couldn't replenish it because Scrooge kept the coal box in his own room. So this is not only a story of enlightenment, but Charles Dickens was very attuned to the inequities of his world, society at his time. And of course, what there was this great inequity of poverty and power. Obviously, Scrooge had the power. It was his coal, and Bob Cratchit could only have access through Scrooge. So this is another leitmotif of this tale. All of a sudden, the door opens, and a cheerful voice cries out, "A Merry Christmas, Uncle." It was his nephew, his dead daughter's son. And Scrooge says his famous "Bah, humbug." And his nephew, who's a very kind of happy sort, says, "Christmas is humbug. You don't really mean that." "I do. Merry Christmas. What right have you to be merry? What reason have you to be merry? You're poor enough." Right, so sounds a little familiar in our time, right? What right have the poor to be happy? They should work. "Come," the nephew says, "but why are you, what right have you to be dismal or morose? You're rich." You know? I mean, it's really good, right? It's like, "then why are you so unhappy if you're rich?" So Scrooge really didn't have an answer. He just could say, "Bah, and humbug." And the nephew says, "Don't be cross. How can I not be when I live in a world of fools? Out with Merry Christmas. What's a Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money, a time for finding yourself a year older but not an hour richer, a time for balancing your books and every item in them dead against you? If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about shouting Merry Christmas should be boiled in their own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through their heart." He should. This is a man who everything is numbers, right? Everything is material. The purpose of life is to accumulate more and more. That is the only joy that he could probably, you know, he's a miser. And all of us have a little bit of Scrooge in him. And so, you know, they go back and forth. I don't know why. Anyhow, he's his nephew's a little naive, and but he's good. He's doing his best to not be sucked in by Scrooge, but to keep positive. So when Scrooge says, you know, "Leave me alone, you know, Christmas, it's never done you any good." And the nephew says, "There are many things from which I might have derived good, but that I have not profited. Christmas among them. I think of Christmas as a good time, a kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time, the only time I know of in the long calendar of the year when men and women seem by one consent to open their shut-up hearts freely and to think of people below them as if they really were fellow passengers to the grave, and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. And therefore, Uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe it has done me good and will do me good. And I say, God bless it. So I think, again, I don't need to say much, but yeah, he's saying, even if this is one dear day a year, when human beings open their heart and their view to see everyone else in this world as equal to themselves, we're all on the same journey from birth to death. You know, and why don't we see each other as fellow travelers? And therefore, like anybody in a group of travelers, we want to take care of each other. Yeah. We are not separate from anyone. And so anyhow, he invites his uncle to come join them on Christmas Day for dinner. Scrooge says, sort of over my dead body, so to speak. He has no time for things like that. And then, of course, now there is this other wonderful encounter where these two gentlemen come in. They have a list. And they want to know, you know, who am I talking to, Scrooge or Marley? Because Scrooge he never even took Marley's name off the sign outside. And therefore, it becomes very clear that these are people looking for a charitable donation. At this festive time of year, Mr. Scrooge said one of them, it is more than desirable that we make some slight provision for the poor and destitute who suffer greatly at this present time. This is today, isn't it? Many, 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 millions, perhaps, you know, in our own country, around the world, suffering, poor and destitute. So let us make some slight provision for them. Many thousands are in want of common necessaries. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comfort, sir. We could add, you know, millions, tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions. And Scrooge says, very, again, current, are there no prisons? Plenty of prisons, they say. And the workhouses, aren't they still in operation? In those days, poor people were sent to workhouses. They are, said one, but I wish they weren't. And aren't the poor laws still enforced? Yes, sir. Oh, I was afraid. From what you had said, I thought maybe somebody had stopped them in doing their useful course. I'm very glad to hear it. But sir, they hardly scarcely furnish Christian cheer of mind or body to the multitude. So we're endeavoring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth. They obviously didn't know about the vegan diet back then. We choose this time because it is time of all others when want is keenly felt and abundance rejoices. So what can we put you down for? They still haven't figured out who they've encountered. So what shall I put you down for? Nothing. Oh, you wish to remain anonymous. I wish to be left alone. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help to support the establishments I have mentioned. They cost enough. And those who are badly off should go there. But many would rather die than go there. Well, if they'd rather die, then let them. And that would decrease the surplus population, which is, as you remember from your high school, college days, that was a very common philosophy there about the surplus population. Anyhow, then Scrooge goes on to say, but really, this is not my business. It's enough for a man to understand his own business and not to interfere with others. Mine occupies me constantly. Good afternoon, sir. Now, are we not all concerned with our own business? Please just stop a second. Is that true? Are we that different from Scrooge? Aren't we all primarily consumed, focused on taking care of our own business? And, you know, then later in the day, Scrooge says to his, you know, in those are the days people did not have paid holidays. except one day a year, Christmas. Scrooge says, I guess you'll want tomorrow off, eh? If it's convenient, sir. You see, Cratchit could only do it with the okay of his boss. It wasn't a right of his. It's not convenient. It's not fair, even. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, you don't think ill of me with that I'm paying you a day wages when you don't work. The clerk timidly observed that it only happened, you know, one day a year. A poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December, said Scrooge. But if I suppose you might, but if you must have the whole day off, well, be here earlier the next morning. Can you see what it's like for people to be dependent on the whims of other people, where all the power over their social standing, their life is in the hands of others who can often not have their well-being in mind. Very, very painful for people, not unknown in our world. So we know Scrooge buttons up, goes home, has a very strange experience when he, gets to his door. There's a knocker on it, and he sees sort of in a ghostly way the face of his old partner, Marley. He thinks something's gone amiss. Goes upstairs to his it's a big, big house, but it's not furnished, and it's cold, and he goes into his little room, dark. Anyhow, as the night progresses, he hears sounds, banging, doorbell ringing, but there's nobody there. And finally, he has an encounter with the ghost of Marley. And it looks just like Marley, except you can kind of see right through him. He has a transparency to him. And his face is kind of done up with a big wrapped around, that's so his jaw wouldn't fall down. And most significantly, he was wrapped in chains. He had chains around him. And so Scrooge was trying to figure out, you know, what he was doing there and what's going on. And every now and then, Marley would let out these terrible moans. Horrible moans, as kind of the ghost tells him a little bit about what his life has been for the last 7 years. And then when he finally takes off his the wrapping and his jaw does fall wide open, Scrooge kind of loses it, falls to his knees. Mercy, dreadful apparition, why do you trouble me? Man of the worldly mind, do you believe in me or not? I do, but why do spirits walk the earth? And why do you come to me? It is required of every man that the spirit within them should walk abroad among his fellow men and travel far and wide. And if the spirit does not go forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. It is doomed to wander through the world. Oh, woe is me. And witness what it cannot share, but might have shared in earth, and turn to happiness. Again, the specter raised a cry, shook its chains, wrung its hands. So very powerful, right? So we see that whatever suffering this ghost has, he says, you know, I wander now among people because I did not wander among human beings to see what was going on, when I was alive. You're fettered. You know, these are the chains. Why? I wear the chain I forged in my life. I made it link by link, yard by yard. I girded it on my own free will, and of my own free will I wore it. Is its pattern strange to you? So this is, you know, Dickens giving us the teaching on karma. Right? I mean, it is the teaching on karma. You know, karma is the actions of our body, speech, and mind that create us, that create our mind, that create our words, that create our actions. We are the forgers of our reality, so to speak, and of our life condition. Is this pattern strange to you? I mean, he's asking Scrooge, do you have any self-awareness? Or would you rather know the weight and length of the strong coil you bear yourself? It was full as heavy and long as this 7 Christmas Eves ago. This is when he died. And you've been working on it ever since. It is a ponderous chain. Of course, by now, Scrooge is getting, I mean, he believes in Marley and he's getting quite concerned. And then Marley goes on to describe his sufferings over these years. And then Jacob is trying to counsel him. But you always were a good man of business, Jacob. Business? Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, benevolence, that was my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business. See? Marley was Scrooge. Scrooge is Marley. But Marley has changed. But he didn't change until he was able to see his suffering and understand that the reason he was going through such suffering now for 7 years and the reason he was being forced to wander like a ghost was because of his prior actions. Marley, don't be hard upon me, pray. And then Marley says, I've sat beside you invisibly many a day. Not an agreeable idea, Scrooge shivered. I am here tonight to warn you that you have a chance and a hope of escaping my fate. A chance and a hope, Ebenezer. So Marley is saying, I've come to you to save you from my fate. That is why I am here. And of course, Dickens is, that's what he's doing for us. And we'll learn how that process goes. And then a very interesting thing, Marley then sort of exits out the window. And it's a second floor, or third floor window. And as he exits, he beckons to a Scrooge to kind of come his way and look. And he points. And Scrooge looks out and he hears all these confused noises in the air, incoherent sounds of lamentation, regret, wailings, inexpressible sorrow, self-accusatory, the specters in the dark night. The air was filled with phantoms, going hither and thither, mourning, moaning. Every one of them wore chains. Many had been personally known to Scrooge in their lives. He was quite familiar with one old ghost in a white waistcoat with a monstrous iron safe attached to his ankle, who cried piteously at being unable to assist a wretched woman with an infant whom it soared below upon a doorstep. The misery was upon all of them. And even though now they wanted to interfere in the affairs of human matters to be of help, they had lost that power. So it was like another. So anyhow, Marley had told that his chance of changing was going to occur that night when he would be visited by 3 spirits. Remember? So Scrooge, thinking that maybe the whole thing was a dream, got back into his bed that, you know, was a 4-poster that had curtains around it. And all of a sudden, when the hour struck 1 on the church clock, the curtains drew aside by a hand, and there was somebody standing there. It was a strange figure, like a child. Not so much like a child as like an old man, like viewed through some supernatural medium, which gave him the appearance of having receded from the view and being diminished to a child's proportion. So he sees this, some kind of strange apparition. It's like a man, but he's a child. He's the size of a child, and he's sort of this child man. But the strangest thing, and again, he describes his whole costume, you know, spirits have their own costume. But the strangest thing about him was that from the crown of his head, there was a bright light, a jet of light. And it was coming out of him. So everything was lit up, but it was coming out of him. And he also had a kind of a large cap that he kind of held under his arm. But through this all, Scrooge looked at it with increasing steadiness, but that was not the strangest quality of all. For at its belt sparkled and glittered now in one part and now another part, and what was light one instant was another instant dark. So the figure itself fluctuated in distinctiveness, now being a thing with one arm, one leg, 20 legs, a leg without a head without a body, dissolving parts, everything melting. And then disappearing into the gloom and then becoming distinct and clear again. So this is the spirit of the past, right? The spirit of the past. Being the spirit of the past, it could see it all. That is its light. It lit up everything. But as we learn, the hat was what human beings fashioned for it, because human beings, we don't want to look at the past. Really look at it very objectively. And the belt is sort of, again, you know, this is my interpretation, forgive it if I'm totally off, but this belt that is constantly shifting shapes, seeing, not see, appears like this, appears like that. I think this is the way we look at our past, you see. We don't look at it clearly, you see, and we don't look at it consistently to really draw the conclusions that need to be drawn. We pull from this, we pull from that, we see it this way, we see it that way, we add five heads, we take away, you know, we're always parsing our past, right? We're always interpreting our past and never just take a clear look at it to really see the causes and conditions that have created us. Now, Scrooge had a very strong desire to see the spirit in his cap and begged him to cover the light. What? Would you so soon put out with your worldly hands the light I give? Yes. Is it not enough that you are the one whose passions made this cap and forced me through the whole trains of the years to wear it so low upon my brow? Right? He has the light, but human beings force the light to be dimmed. Then, you know, Scrooge says, well, why have you come here? Because of your welfare, your reclamation. Take heed, he puts out his hand, clasps him by the arm, rise and walk with me. And then, of course, he also goes out the window. But I'm immortal, I'm gonna fall. No, you'll be upheld, do not worry. And as his words were spoken, they passed out. And again, this is the mind. I mean, we can pass through time. We can pass through forms. I mean, this is, you know, the mind can go anywhere. We don't have to be afraid, you know. But we're afraid. Many people are afraid to go into their past or look at things or take an objective look at themselves, you know, with that shining light. So it's good to know that someone's walking with you. But don't be scared. And as he traveled through this bardo, he was conscious of a thousand odors floating in the air, each one connected with a thousand thoughts, hopes, and joys, and cares long, long forgotten. He's traveled through his own consciousness, his own memory. Your lips are trembling. What is that upon your cheek? Because he had taken him back to where he grew up. And obviously just seeing that, touch something long forgotten. They walked along the roads. He saw boys his own. I mean, he saw his past, obviously at a happier time. And the ghost says, because I think he was a little concerned, he said, no, they can't see you. They have no consciousness of this. They're but the shadows of the things that have been. Our past cannot see us. Many people worry. We can see our past. Our past cannot see us. That is the power of the mind. That is the power of consciousness. That is the power of insight. We can look. We can look. We can look at our past. We can look at our, we can close our eyes and objectively see ourselves right now if we want. But that which we see cannot see us, because it is not us, but it has conditioned us. Anyhow, he takes him to school. Sounds as if I remember correctly, his mother had died in childbirth. His father could not look at him. So he sent him off to boarding school, and he's just, you know, he doesn't go home at Christmas, and he sees himself there all alone. All the boys have gone home, and he's all alone. And actually tear comes to his eye, and all of a sudden he remembers that there'd been some boy singing carols earlier that day, and he had told the boy to go away. And he's thinking, I should have given him something, because he sees himself as a sad boy. And then things change, and his dad changes to him, and he sees his sister, his little sister, and he's brought home, and all of a sudden his life is good again, right? And he gets a job with old Fezziwig, who's a businessman. I guess, I'm just guessing that he became an accountant. He worked in a county house. But Fezziwig is a good employer. You know, he's happy. He takes good care of his employees. And on Christmas, you know, there's a big celebration and a party and invites many people, and everybody's dancing and having a wonderful time. And even Scrooge begins to feel a little lightness in him and begins to tap his foot to the music. And he expresses something, what a good thing. And the ghost says, what are you talking about? This is just nothing. Well, I mean, all he's doing is to make these silly people full of gratitude. And now Scrooge says, small? Like, no, this is big. Yeah, anyhow. And yeah, well, you know, anyhow, it isn't, and all of a sudden Scrooge, you know, it's you know, devil's advocate. So the spirit is saying to him, but oh, Fezziwig, he's just spent, you know, 5 or 6 pounds. I mean, you know, why do you be grateful? It's only money. No, it's not that, said Scrooge. It isn't that spirit. He has the power to render us happy or unhappy, to make our service light or burdensome, a pleasure or a toil. Say that his power lies in words and looks, in things so slight and insignificant that is impossible to add and count them up then. The happiness he gives, this is the true fortune. So we can see Scrooge, because he was very happy there, you know, and all of a sudden he's realizing why he was happy. And it wasn't because of money. It was because he was in the presence of somebody who cared about him, right? And how important that was. Sort of Scrooge is hoping this is the end of it, but no, he takes him on. And he takes him on to another situation around that time, a little later. Scrooge had been engaged. Right, he had met someone when he was poor and engaged to her, and she had continued with him as he had grown, but now he's changed. I think he actually, if I remember correctly, he ended up screwing Fezziwig, and he and this other guy, went in business, right? And because again, it was all about business, right? It's all just about business. And she's basically ending their relationship. She's saying it matters little. Another idol has displaced me. And if it can cheer and comfort you in time to come, as I would have tried to do, I don't grieve. "What idol has displaced you?" says Scrooge. "A golden one." "No," he says, "this is just the even-handed dealing of the world. There is nothing in it. There's nothing worse in the world than poverty. There's nothing it professes to condemn with such severity as the pursuit of wealth," you see. She said, "You fear the world too much. All your hopes have merged into the hope of being beyond the chance of its sordid reproach. I've seen all your nobler aspirations fall one by one until the master passion gain engrosses you. Have I not?" It's very powerful. You know, I think many, 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 many people start out in life much kinder and idealistic and open and more human-centered. But life conditions them, work conditions them, especially by what they do. And oftentimes, all the really wonderful instincts of their heart are forgotten. And they become sort of a shadow of who they were or who they had the potential to be. "Yeah, so gain engrosses you," she says. "What then?" he says. "Maybe I've just grown wiser, but I haven't changed toward you." Anyhow, she can't buy that. She says, "That which promised happiness when we were one in heart is fraught with misery now that we are two. How often keenly I've thought this, I will not say. It is enough that I've thought of it, and I release you." I think it's very powerful. When we were one in heart, there was happiness. But now it has become fraught with misery because we have become two. And I think that really speaks to, you know, many of the issues that pain people in relationships. We enter relationships, especially loving relationships, because of a sense of oneness. And when we feel that oneness, that closeness with another human being, it gives us happiness. But the destroyer of oneness is two-ness, separation, right? And when we move into two-ness, there is misery. So anyhow, and it ends up actually, you know, the spirit of Christmas past will not let him alone. Now he takes him to show that his fiancée eventually got married, and now she's very happy, and she has kids, and, you know, a very happy scene. And her husband comes home on Christmas and says, "Guess who I just ran into? I just passed by Scrooge's office, and it wasn't shut up, and he had a candle inside, and I could hardly help seeing him. His partner lies upon the point of death, I hear, and there he is, sat alone, quite alone. Alone in the world." Scrooge says in a broken voice, "Spirit, remove me from this place. I told you these were the shadows of things that have been, that they are what they are. Do not blame me." "Remove me," he says. "I cannot bear it." He looked upon the ghost and saw that it was looking on him with a face that was strange way. It was like fragments of all the faces that had been shown to him. And he started wrestling with it. Leave me, take me back, haunt me no more. And so there was a struggle. And in that struggle, the ghost did not resist him at all. And Scrooge observed that its light was burning high and bright. And he felt maybe that was the power. So he seized the extinguisher cap and with one action, pressed it down upon the head, and the spirit dropped beneath it. So the extinguisher covered its whole form. And though Scrooge pressed it down with its whole force, he could not hide the light that streamed out from under it in an unbroken flood upon the ground. Right? Many of us know that. We want to shut down the memory. We want to shut down the self-knowing, but it's too late, right? The light has been lit. Scrooge has seen. So, finds himself back in bed, has a little time to restore himself. Maybe he falls back to sleep. And then the bells ring for two. And once again, things are pulled back. Except there's a totally different spirit. This is the spirit of Christmas present. He's like big and jolly. And the room is festooned with Christmas trees and candles and all wonderful foods. And everything is good. And he holds out his hand by this time, Scrooge knows the drill. He takes his hands and he just takes them all around and shows them. It goes on for pages and pages. And it's said before this book that this idea of this Christmas when plenty and lights and candles and everybody happy came from this. Before that, it wasn't celebrated in that way. That sort of in A Christmas Carol, Dickens sort of gave that model that people have of how this glorious, wonderful, warm, loving, beautiful way that people celebrate Christmas together. Everybody's happy. Anyhow, he shows them everything. I mean, then he says an interesting thing because poor people in those days didn't have their own ovens. So it sounds as if they would take their turkeys or whatever it need to be baked, they would take it to the local baker, who had an oven. So there was a stream of people going in and out of the baker. And the spirit of Christmas would go around with his little invisible magic wand or something, kind of spreading Christmas cheer on everything. And then Scrooge now challenges him because he sort of sees him as a force for the dominant religion at the time. And he said, well, why do you cause these poor people? I mean, Sundays, you enforce a day of rest and all the bakers have to be closed. So poor people can't, warm their food on that day, And he sort of blames the spirit for that act of Scrooginess. And Scrooge says, yeah, forgive me if I'm wrong, but it's been done in your name, at least in the name of your family. He's obviously talking to the Christian family. And then he says an interesting thing, especially in terms of our current world with so many religions and what they say. He says, there are some upon this earth of yours who lay, this is the spirit talking to Scrooge. There are some upon this earth of yours who lay claim to know us and who do their deeds of passion, pride, ill will, hatred, envy, bigotry, and selfishness in our name. But they are strange to us. They are strange to all our kith and kin. Remember that. And remember to charge their doings on them, not us. Very powerful, right? Right? How so many people say things that are so unloving, uncompassionate, uncaring, embrace anger, embrace killing, embrace all kinds of terrible, embrace indifference. And they do it in the name of religion. Embrace intolerance, hatred for their fellow human being. So this, Dickens was quite a social commentator at his time. And there are lots of these little kind of innuendos, and that was no innuendo. That was quite powerful. He goes to the Cratchit's house, to Bob Cratchit, and sees this very happy but poor family. He sees, them in their family celebrating their best and happy with each other, and he sees Tiny Tim, their youngest son, who's quite sickly. And Scrooge says, with an interest he had never felt before, tell me, will Tiny Tim live? I see a vacant seat, said the ghost, in the poor chimney corner, and a crutch without an owner. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die. Oh, no! No, no, say he'll be spared. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, none other of my race will find him. And so what? So what if he dies? He'd better do it. and decrease the surplus population. So a mirror is being held up to him. He hung his head to hear his own words quoted, and he was overcome with penitence and grief. "Man," said Ghost, "if man you be in heart, forbear that wicked cant until you have discovered what the surplus is and where it is. Will you decide what men shall live?" Of course, you know, everything. So for those of you who aren't men, which is at least half of us, if not more, forgive. This was a time when everybody was referred to as men, human. But of course, it means all of us. "Will you decide whom will live and who will die? If that be, then in the sight of heaven, you are more worthless and less fit to live than millions like this poor man's child. Oh God, to hear the insect on the leaf pronouncing on the too much life among his hungry brothers in the dust." Very powerful, right? The insect meaning you who have a full belly, you who are on the leaf. You're looking down to all those insects on the ground in the dust and saying, "Oh, yeah. So what if they die?" And so he wanders about. He sees all kinds of people together. He sees his family. He takes them everywhere. He takes them to miners. The miners who live in the bowel, but look, and he shows them how they, in their families, even in their poverty and hard work, are celebrating life. So again, he takes them all around. He takes them to his nephew's house. And it's interesting. So he's telling his friends who are all gathered for Christmas Eve celebrations about his visit to Scrooge. And they're saying, "Well, how can you even have anything to do with him? You know, he's such a horrible being." And Scrooge said, "No, I am sorry for him. I couldn't be angry with him if I tried. He suffers by his own ill whims. Himself always." Yeah. Anyhow, so it's, again, I think a very beautiful little moment where, you know, he doesn't have ill will towards Scrooge. You know, understanding he suffers. If he doesn't come and join us and he's all alone, it's his own loss, you see. I mean, most of us look at others from our own point of view, what they're doing for us, you know what I mean, or whether they agree with us. And he's looking outside and going, "Yeah, I feel for him." He says, and then his son goes on, "I mean to give him the same chance every year, whether he likes me or not, for I pity him. He may rail at Christmas till he dies, but he can't help thinking the better of it. I defy him. If he finds me going in there in good temper year after year and saying, 'Uncle Scrooge, how are you?' Yes. If he only one day leaves his poor clerk 50 pounds, that's something. And I think I might have shaken him a little yesterday." So that's, you know, I think very powerful. That's really the Buddhist non-attachment to outcome. You know, we do good in the world. We do kind acts, we do loving acts. We work very directly with human beings to help them out of their misery, out of their suffering, out of their delusions. Whether they do it or not, we have no control over. All we have control over is what we put out. You know, the world may not change. The world may not become peaceful. The world may not become caring and loving. The world may not become nonviolent. But we can be. we can certainly put that energy continually out into the world as we care and love all beings, no matter what their political views or anything. Because like he says here, they all suffer, just like me. We are all fellow travelers. Just checking the time. Much they saw and far they went, and many homes they visited, but always with a happy end. The spirit stood beside sick beds, and they were cheerful. So this is, he's cheering. On foreign lands, struggling men, poverty. But where, you know, where there was poverty, people became rich. In almshouse, hospital, jail, in misery's every refuge, where vain man and his little brief authority has not made the door fast and barred the spirit, he left his blessing and taught Scrooge his precepts. And just as they're about to leave, Scrooge says, hold on a second, that's my own words. I see something protruding from your, he's wearing like a big robe. What is that? Is that a foot or a claw? It might be a claw because there's no flesh upon it. Look here. And from the foldings of its robe, it brought forth two children, wretched, abject, frightful, hideous, miserable. They knelt at his feet. Oh man, look here. Look, look here, said the ghost. And there was a boy and a girl, yellow, meager, ragged, scowling, wolfish, prostrate too in their humility, where graceful youth should have filled out his features and touched them with fresh tints, a stale and shriveled hand of age. Where angels might have sat enthroned, devils lurked and glare out menacingly. No change, no gradation, no perversion of humanity in any grade through all the mysteries of wonderful creation has monsters half as horrible and dread. Scrooge was appalled. He wanted to say, oh, but these are very nice children. But the words choked. He couldn't even lie. And Scrooge said, Spirit, are they your children? No, they are yours. They cling to me, this boy appealing to me. This boy is ignorance, this girl is want. Beware them both, but of all their degree, beware this boy. For on his brow I see that written which is doom, unless the writing be erased. Have they no refuge or resource? Cried Scrooge. Are there no prisons? Said the spirit. Are there no workhouses? Yeah, so this is again very, you know, I mean, this is another, you know, and this was something very Dickens was very concerned about. Child welfare, child poverty, child labor, you know, lack of opportunity for children. And he names it. He says, you know, they are consumed with want, need, overwhelming hunger, and they're ignorant. They have not been educated in values and meaning. And he said, beware of these two, because they are doomed. And we are like that. There are many, many in our society. Because of their upbringing, because of their poverty, because of all kinds of social conditions, grow up with this, well, this kind of mind state. And it comes back to haunt us. So what do we do in our society? We do what Scrooge said. We lock them up. We lock them away from us. So now, the last of the spirits. This is a very different phantom, slow and grave and silent. Scrooge bent down upon his knee. The spirit was all in gloom and mystery. Deep black garments covered, concealed it, save for one outstretched hand. Tall and stately, a mysterious presence. Scrooge said, "Am I in the presence of the ghosts of Christmas yet to come?" No answer, just pointing. "Are you going to show me the shadows of the things that have not happened but will happen in time before us? Is that so?" It's kind of Scrooge sort of has the drill now. But this is a very different spirit. This is the future. And yeah, he could fear. He felt his legs trembling beneath him. And he had trouble walking because he knew something was different about this. "Ghost of the future, I fear you more than any spirit I have seen. But as I know now, your purpose is to do me good, and as I hope to live to be another man from what I was, I'm prepared to bear you company and do it with a thankful heart. Will you not speak to me?" And just pointed. So this is very important, I think, because many of us, you know, the book could have ended here, right? You see? And many of us, this is where we end, you see? We acknowledge certain things. And when we acknowledge many of the painful things in our life or things we've done or things we're doing in the present, and we kind of get a bigger picture, it's like, that's enough. Okay, I'm a changed person. But it doesn't work that way, you see? Because we have this karmic pattern, which is deeply seated, which is going to propel us forward. And that's what he's showing now. Even if you decide you're going to, you know, make some minor changes in your life, I'm going to be a better person. I'm going to give more to charity. You know what I mean? I'm going to go volunteer at a soup kitchen. You know what I mean? Where these sort of, but this, these spirits are showing us something else, something deeper. He's shown us the depth of the karma, the cause and conditions that have created Scrooge in the past and his actions in the present. And he's got to see, we all need to see how if we don't change in the actions of our body, speech, and mind, how things are going to unfold. Lead on, lead on, lead on. And he takes him, first he takes him to a group of businessmen who are talking about somebody who they call Scratch, who died last night. And all they're talking about is his money, what happened to his money, who'd he leave it to? They laugh at him, you know, he was such a miserable thing, alone. Scrooge is wondering why is this, you know, this has nothing to do with me. I'm this somebody I know. I mean, I don't know why they're telling me this. All of a sudden he takes him by his workplace. Scrooge and Marley and Scrooge. He looks in the window. There's different furniture. There are different people inside. Things are changing. Then he takes him to this kind of part of town, probably like the part of town where we are now, you know. People here, you know, go to the pawn shops. There they went to these kind of certain kind of people who bought, you know, used stuff, right? Sort of rags and other kinds of things. So he takes them to this very dark, terrible place, and stinky and, you know, all just kind of old stuff. And there's the rag seller or the rag guy, and there are these other people there selling him things. What are they selling him? Oh, you know, sheets and blankets, the curtains off a bed, some candlesticks, you know. And they're talking about this miser who died. So these are the people who cared for him. Like this is his, I think this was the his housekeeper, right? She was the woman. And the other guy was the undertaker who had been called to the house when this person had died. And basically, you know, he doesn't know it yet, but they're talking, you know, and they're just talking about this miserable human being and how they, you know, he didn't deserve, you know, to die underneath nice linens. You know, it was such a horrible scene. He just should be covered with rags. And I mean, they just, anyhow, So they're just laughing at this miser, this miserable human being, and nobody came to see him, and he died all alone, and nobody cared about him. Anyhow, so he sees that. And then you know, and then Scrooge says to the spirit, isn't there anybody in all of London who had a little good feeling for the death of this man? He hasn't quite figured out, you know, who it is yet. He says, oh yeah, I'll take you. And he takes him to this poor family. And the husband comes home and says, basically to his wife, I have very good news for you. And I think we had seen earlier that, you know, one of the things that Scrooge is working on Christmas Eve was sending some letters to some of the people who were indebted to them, basically saying that he was gonna, you know, foreclose on them or something like that, or throw them out. And the husband comes home, I have very good news for us. Scrooge has died. So, you know, that enforcement order can't be enforced for a while, and by that time we'll be able to get back on our feet. So this was the one person in all of London who had some good feeling for Scrooge's passing. And then he goes on to take him to Cratchit's house. And we see that Tiny Tim has died, and there's great sadness in the house, and that. And then finally he takes him to a graveyard. The spirit stood among the graves and pointed down to one. Before I draw nearer to the stone to which you point, answer me one question. This is a question we all need to ask ourselves. Are these the shadows of the things that will be, or are they the shadows of things that may be? Ghost just points. Men's courses will foreshadow certain ends to which if preserved and they must lead. But if the courses be departed from, the ends will change. Say it is thus. He's really saying, say the law is, the world is run by cause and effect, that if somebody changes their course, the causes, they can have different effects. He's begging, tell me it's not fate. Tell me it's not sealed. You know, I mean, that's what he's asking. You know, is change possible? Even with this long train of miserable actions of body, speech, and mind, tell me that things can change. Didn't answer. He goes to the grave, he reads upon the grave his own name. And all of a sudden he falls upon his knees. Was I the person who lay on the bed? And this was, you know, the dead person in the room. Oh no, no, no. Spirit, spirit, he clutches the robe. I am not the man I was. I will not be the man I have been, because of everything that's happened. Why show me this? If this is like all hope is past. Good spirit, intercede for me, pity me. Assure me that I may change these shadows you have shown me. Please, I can alter my life. You know, it's, what do they say in the alcohol recovery movement? Everybody has to hit their bottom. You know, there are many bottoms to hit, but you sort of have to hit your bottom when you're just sick of the whole thing and you're really committed to changing. I mean, you know, it's again, this, he's taking him all the way through, isn't he? Right to the end, showing him where this is all gonna end. And now, you know, it's no longer just very intellectually going, I will change, I've learned my lesson. You know, he's like down on his knees, right? He's begging. Assure me that I can change these shadows you have shown me by an altered life. And then he makes his vow. This is something we'll all be doing at our beginning anew. I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all year. I will live in the past, the present, the future. The spirits of all three will strive in me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. Oh, tell me that I may sponge away the writing on this stone. In his agony, he grabbed hold of the spectral hand. It tried to free itself, but he was very strong and held on to it. But the spirit, stronger yet, pushed him away. Holding up his hands in a last prayer to have his fate reversed, he saw an alteration in the phantom's hood and dress. It shrunk, collapsed, and dwindled down into a bedpost. He's back in his bed. Best and happiest of all, the time before him was now his own. I will live in the past, the present, the future, he repeated again. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. Oh, Jacob Marley, heaven in the Christmas time be praised for this. I say all this on my knees, old Jacob, on my knees. And he just, you know, he walks around the room just kind of looking at it, just amazed that everything is, you know, still there, you know. The curtains are still there, and his bedding's still there, and the candles are still there. And Scrooge is like, he's laughing, he's crying in the same breath. I don't know what to do. I'm as light as a feather, happy as an angel, merry as a schoolboy. A Merry Christmas, everybody. Happy New Year. Okay, so what's happened to him? He's had, which is central to Buddhist enlightenment, he's had a transformation. You know, he's had a transformation. The man who started that night is no longer the man that ends up. And we can say, how can that be? How can that be? That in one night, he's such a different human being. He's no longer conditioned by all his angers and his fears. And maybe, I mean, he was bitter in life. His childhood revealed his bitterness, his loss, his lack of love. I mean, he's enlightened to the whole thing. And he's transformed. How do you know he's transformed? Because he's happy. He's free. You know, that's enlightenment. You're free of your conditioning. You're free of everything that weighs you down. You're free of all the restraints that conditioning has put on you. And now you realize you have the potential to do and be anything. And he's always frisking around the room. And he's happy, happy. And he just laughs and laughs. Really, for a man who'd been out of practice for so many years, it was a splendid laugh. The father of a long, long line of brilliant laughs. And again, you know, so I'm sure many of you remember the story, but he, you know, sends a little boy out. I mean, he goes to buy a goose for Bob Cratchit. Again, he didn't know about vegan diet. You know, to Bob Cratchit for their Christmas. He goes, shows up at his nephew's house and joins them. He bumps into those two gentlemen, remember, that he was so he wouldn't give a penny to. He bumps into them in the street. He tells them, please come, forgive me. He was happy. Everything he saw made him happy. And even the next day, he told Cratchit, I'm going to raise your salary. I'm going to endeavor to assist you with your struggling family. I'll help you with all your affairs. And finally, he said, and go get some more coal. So Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became a good friend, as good a master, as good a man as the old city knew. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him. He let them laugh. He did not heed them, for he was wise enough to know that nothing ever happened in this world for good at which some people did not have their fill of laughter, right? He didn't care what people thought about him. And knowing that such as these would be blind anyway, He thought it quite as well that they should wrinkle up their eyes in grins, as have the malady and less attractive forms. It reminds me of what bodhisattvas say. You know, I want to make people happy. Even if they laugh at me, they're happy. That makes me happy. I heard people say that. Anyhow, that is the Dharma of Scrooge. Again, very powerful. It's kind of an abridged edition. I encourage you to read it if you want. It's quite powerful. But again, it is a tale of enlightenment. It is something that should speak to all of us. We're not like Scrooge. We're not such an extreme character. But all of us have our conditioning. All of us have the things that have conditioned us, narrowed us, constricted us. And all of us have our aspiration of how we want to show up in the world, open, loving, caring, free, happy. So this is very powerful. This is a good affirmation. If a guy like Scrooge can do it in one night, certainly the rest of us can do it too. And I think that's another power of this. So again, we will be together at Beginning Anew on Christmas Day, which will be our opportunity to kind of do this process ourselves. I mean, on New Year's Day. So I look forward to seeing you all then. And if we don't see each other again, then this is a wonderful, as was said today, this is a good time of year when many people, put on their best self and are very openly caring and generous to each other in many ways. So may all of us participate in that wonderful tradition.